Students for a Better Future, heralded by Doreen Finkel. Hi, this is Mark Falzon and Ruben Torres, and we're here on another edition of Students for a Better Future. We have a special guest tonight. We're trying to bring him online now. His name is Chris Salcedo. He's another type A personality. I hope you've noticed. Hello, sir. You are on the air. Is this Mr. Salcedo?
Yes, sir, it is. Hello, guys.
Hello. Yeah, Ruben's here. Ruben, say hi to your buddy. Ruben, are you there, Ruben? What happened? Well, anyway, I'm here, Mr. Salcedo. Welcome to Students for a Better Future radio show. We thank you for your promptness. I don't know what's going on with Ruben. Ruben, are you there? I was just talking to him online, sir. And anyway, just before we went online and the show came on, results were coming in. And we see that Trump has already taken Mississippi and he's pulling away in Michigan. Do you have any news on that, sir?
I'm seeing the very same returns that you are seeing. As a matter of fact, I just got an alert that came across. Let's see, Donald Trump projected winner of Michigan, according to Fox News. So there you go. There's up to the minute. Up to the
I'm
minute
here.
Results. Of course, these are all proportional delegate appropriations. So there are a lot of guys that are on his heels. In particular, Ted Cruz, who will probably have a decent night. And I don't think that Mr. Trump will be able to pull away with these four states.
I'm here.
Okay, all right, Ruben, I know. We lost you. It had to be you, brother, because Mr. Salcedo and I have been conversing on the air for several minutes.
Yeah, I apologize that my connection. Well, I have to tell you, Chris, thank you for coming on the New Age Politics, Broadcasting in Politics, which is basically we're trying to make a point here. But I appreciate you coming on. I listen to you on my way to the office every morning, and you convince me. You're definitely a true conservative, and especially in Texas. You're the voice of Texas every morning.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, but yeah, that is it's nice to know that folks are out there listening, and you know what, the show exists on several different levels, is the reason why we're out there. Conservatism is the primary thrust. But being a conservative Latino also has it. Well, in some circles, it seems to be an oddity. But I think it's more commonplace than many folks even know or would like to admit.
Right. One of the things that I caught on that I've been listening to your show for a while. And when a lot of the, because you get a lot of Cruz supporters, Trump supporters, and all over Texas. But one of the things that I've learned over the past couple of weeks, the whole process of Trump, the whole Trump craziness that has been happening, a lot of that has to do with also because he's star material. I mean, he's been out there, name recognition. I mean, but one of the things that really, and I wrote an article that I actually sent to you in regards to how many Democrats are crossing over in open primaries, which I think a lot of my colleagues also have not brought up, especially in the mainstream media. How many crossover of Democrats have been voting in open primaries? And that actually has hurt the other candidates. What's your impression, your take on that?
I think that there's an awful lot of that happening. But because, I mean, and this is hardly unique. I mean, the Republicans back in 2008 at the behest of a great talk show host by the name of Rush Limbaugh. Had undertaken something called Operation Chaos, which was to keep Hillary Clinton in the game a lot longer than she would have. John McCain was already the GOP nominee back there in 2008. So the idea was to keep Hillary alive using Republicans crossing over and voting in these open primaries just so she and Barack Obama could continue to bloody each other up, if you will. We are seeing some of that in the Trump phenomenon too, but, and this is the big caveat, there is also stories coming out of Massachusetts where 20,000 Democrats have left the
right.
party and registered as independents, 16,500 of them as independents, and 3,500 going all the way and becoming Republicans. And whereas some of those can be attributed to wanting to play some shenanigans in the Republican sandbox, I think there is also a segment of the Democrat Party, and it's an increasing rarity, but there is a segment of the Democrat Party that has seen 7 to 8 years of the most extremist left-wing president that this country has ever seen. Now they see their party actually entertaining running an actual socialist as a
right.
nominee, to where they're saying, I can't get behind this noise. And I think Bill Maher said it best when he said, you know, if it comes down to a choice between Donald Trump, who wants to prohibit entry of Muslims from terrorist countries until we can vet them, as opposed to a party that can't even say the name radical Islamic fundamentalist terrorists,
right.
he thinks Donald Trump will win.
Definitely. I like I said, I would definitely vote for Mr. Trump against Hillary. I just think that that's something that a lot of people are not aware. Because I have colleagues and friends that are basically saying, well, you know, all these registered Republicans are you know, evangelical Christians are voting for Mr. Trump, and I'm saying, well, a lot of them, a great portion of them, are Democrats.
Some are, yes, and some of these evangelicals, which many had believed would be solidly in Ted Cruz camp, being an open Christian himself, I think that the miscalculation on the Cruz camp part was just how much America has been treated to what I classify as a liberal beatdown all of these last 7 years, where it has been the call of the day to besmirch and denigrate and talk down America from the highest office in the land, from the president's
right.
From the president's residence in the Oval Office. A man I call President Obama has a habit of talking down this country and talking down this nation's history and heritage. And I think the Cruz camp really underestimated just how much that wore down and would have supplanted, you know, folks' religious predisposition coming into the election.
Right.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to add in that I follow the Alinsky-esque tactic, and I have met several names for President Obama. Like, for instance, I call him a jackass, but I spell it with the two S's at the end capitalized, as in Hitler's SS, because of Obama's weaponization of government. I also, one of my favorites is Generalissimo Hussein. That's another name I call him because he behaves like he's the head of some tiny Central American junta, for God's sakes. And I just had to throw those insults in because you can never pass up an opportunity to stick your thumb in the eye of Generalissimo Hussein. So continue, gentlemen. I apologize.
Well, you know what? They are not insults when they're accurate.
Exactly. You see, because, I mean, I've watched the leftists have much success using Alinsky-esque tactics. So my attitude is, why reinvent the wheel? These boys have laid out for us what works, so I follow it. I insult all these people at every chance I get. That's one reason I love doing this show with Ruben, because, again, you just can't stick your thumb in the eye of Obama enough. And these radical leftists.
I gotta tell you, man, what's missing from our political debate these days, and I think it's the reason why we're seeing the ascendancy of Trump, is that Republicans have been cowed, have been too timid in the face of, let's be quite frank, the damage and utter destruction, which is the agenda of the Obama administration of this country, just making us one of many countries, nothing exceptional, nothing special about us. And that is not the tradition of America. And there have been, there's been such timidity from folks who have fancied themselves conservatives, Brooks or Peggy Noonan or the like, who have just been so willing to cow to this, to this wannabe dictator. And it's high time that the American people, it's I don't look at it as insults. I just look at it as candor. And he has called us, he has called us far worse.
Chris, I wanted to get your point of view on the situation, the current past, because I've discussed this on previous show. We had Roger Stone last week on our show. One of the things that, that I'm looking at in regards to getting the nomination, automatic nomination, the GOP nomination, it would have to be at this present moment, even with Mr. Trump winning Michigan or even Mississippi, the numbers don't add up for any of the three candidates, or the two candidates, Cruz or Trump, in regards to getting the automatic GOP nomination. I would believe that we are heading for potentially a brokered convention, which we haven't had since 1948.
Yeah, contested or brokered convention. And it, it is definitely something we have not seen in our lifetimes. And it is, it, of course, in a political year like this, I mean, wouldn't that be just the perfect capper to the perfect election season? Where, and this would have one advantage, I would say, is that all the energy and all the attention from the nationwide press after Hillary Clinton finally puts away the socialist, the woman who won't admit she's a socialist puts away the man who admits he's a socialist. Once that's over and done with, then she's going to be forgotten, and the mainstream press will be focused exclusively on what's going on over on the Republican side of the ledger, especially with the star power that Donald Trump brings. So in that sense, it's good. Where this brokered slash contested convention is bad is that no matter which way you look at this, and again, the aforementioned Peggy Noonan, she was right about one thing when she opined that no matter which way this election cycle goes, whether Trump is the nominee or whether this goes to a brokered or contested convention, the Republican Party will never be the same, and I've got to admit, it deserves it.
I agree.
Did. Wait, I have to chime in here. You know what? And I wanted to ask the guest here, because I like asking this question of astute people. And the question is, why do the Republicans, you know, aside from the fact that they probably sold out to the Arab oil money and the international robber barons, why do the Republicans fight conservatives and the Tea Party with brass knuckles and then turn around and fight a jackass with pillows? Do you know why this is, sir?
Yes, because they seem to identify more with their compatriots up on Capitol Hill because they're all part of the same club. They all have the same quote-unquote headaches, which of course is now we are learning more and more because of this election cycle. Their headaches of accommodating their donors rather than accommodating we the people. Their primary concern is their ability to deliver for the money guys. So the guys who fund their campaigns. That's why Trump worries them so, and to a lesser degree, Ted Cruz, is because these guys have it in their heads, at least allegedly, that they want to service the constituency. And if the constituency is serviced, and it's government of, by, and for the people, then it can't be government of, by, and for the traitorous insurance companies, or government of, by, and for the crony capitalists, or government of, by, and for all the Democrats' special interest groups. So they're all the reason why they share such an affinity up there on Capitol Hill is they've all got a good thing going. It's a rather exclusive 535 people in Congress and one president in his administration. And it's the political class, and they love the royal treatment.
I want to ask you, do you have any idea, Beth, totally for both the House and the Senate, any idea what that number climbs into?
Well, if you look at each congressional staff and each Senate staff's office, I mean, they've got from the folks answering the phones up front, the policy people, to communications people. I mean, a small office can have anywhere, and then they've got people back in their home districts. So, I mean, just a congressman has, you know, has a an entourage, if you will, 10, 15, 20 people. Just for their office, and the senator has even more.
Wow. And so when we got 535, 5,000, so almost 10,000 people.
Remember Obamacare, what they did in Obamacare is they exonerated themselves and their staff by giving themselves a little bit of a stipend there to afford the increases in the health care costs. And Republicans partake in it as well as Democrats.
And how about the waivers? What's the count of are the waivers over 2,000 yet? As Generalissimo Hussein bestows his criminal blessings on all the exemptions to Obamacare, is it over 2,000 now? Do you know?
Yeah, you know what would be ironic is that all the companies that have applied for and gotten exemptions to delay or at least ease into Obamacare, that if we do get a Republican president and a Republican Congress, they may be able to finally get rid of this thing. But wouldn't that be ironic if all of these waivers, we never suffered under it anyway, it was just the rest of the country because we were part of the protected political class.
Right. Yeah, the scoundrels. Yes. And also, you know what, Chris, I wanted to just alert you to the fact that this is a bipartisan show. Rubin is a registered Republican. I am a registered Democrat, so we are fully bipartisan on this show. And now, despite the fact that the two words I use to describe the DNC junta, the words I use are disdain and revulsion, but I'm still a registered Democrat.
Get out. You know, I never would. I would never have pegged you for a registered Democrat. I would have an independent, yes. Maybe a libertarian, but not a Democrat.
Old New York City Democrat. I have to say that I'm looking back now to Ronald Reagan's 40-plus state win his first time around. And the thing I am, because this show basically targets students, that's our predominant audience. And what I always like to point out to the students is that Ronald Reagan's second term, where he ran for re-election, so we've had him in office 4 years. We know what this boy is up to. He won 49 out of 50 states. And the thing I always ask the students, can you imagine in this environment one of the candidates winning 49 of 50 states or even over 40 of 50? I mean, that's the kind of revolution that went on, and that's why the ground is shaking now with Donald Trump. And as a Democrat, I am pleased. I mean, I'm looking at the list of Trump enemies, and I'm just looking at it in my head. I mean, the Mexicans have come out, the Chinese have come out, the Europeans have come out, the Japanese have come out. Everyone's come out attacking Trump, and I have to scoff at their ignorance because they believe this is going to have an effect, and someone's going to go, oh, the ex-president of Mexico, that fine, upstanding choir boy is against Donald Trump. That's going to change my vote. Are these people out of their minds or what?
No, they are out of their minds. And you know what? And what astonishes me about the Republican Party is that here we have the template, the Ronald Reagan template. As you mentioned, his second term in office, a 49-state landslide. And we have people inside of the Republican Party who lead it today who say, you know, it's time to leave that behind. It's time to leave Ronald Reagan behind. That actually goes back to one of your other questions is, why is this Republican Party intent on committing suicide? They have only themselves to blame for Donald Trump because of their timidity and ineffectiveness. And you can tell as they get their hackles up to oppose Donald Trump, really what's on their mind is just preserving their own power and influence. The rest of it, they couldn't care less.
Yes, it boils down to good old-fashioned greed.
That's the bottom line here, folks. Greed by the Democrats and greed by the Republicans and greed by the New World Order robber barons who house themselves in the UN, of course. You know, that other fine agency representing the will of the common man. Not, you know, yeah. I say that tongue in cheek.
Hey, Chris. Chris.
Yeah.
What during my prepping, I have a set of questions for you. Where do you see Kasich going, and do you see him as an alternative, as a VP? And where do you see Rubio? Even if he wins Florida, I think he's basically someone right now who's his status as a candidate for the presidency is shot. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a visceral reaction to Mr. Kasich, who seems to be out there campaigning, saying the best attribute for a Republican is how much a Republican can bend over for a Democrat. That seems to be how.
Hey, this show is rated PG-13, buddy. So stop right there.
Well, yeah, that's about as far as I'm going to go. I won't be talking about the size of anybody's hands. In this race, I'm not going to be doing that. But John Kasich, to me, I mean, here's a guy who got out in front of the cameras when Donald Trump had cursed on the trail. And John Kasich revealed how he viewed the presidency of the United States. He says, the president is the father of America. And I looked at him and I said, you know what, Kasich? I'm not electing a daddy. I'm electing somebody to be a representative of we the people. And if you think... if you think that we're electing a daddy to tell us what to do, that is why I have such a visceral reaction to Mr. Kasich, number one. And then he's out there on the trail. Oh, I'm not sure if my destiny is to be president. Well, you know what? Why don't you make room for somebody who is sure that their destiny is? Because we really don't need a guy like you, Mr. Kasich. So this guy is an apologist. He apologizes for conservatism. He isn't a conservative, and he believes that everything that is responsible for building up the Trump phenomenon right now, oh, we ought to continue more of that, which is an ineffective, weak, and docile Republican Party. On the other hand, for Rubio, aside from his Gang of Eight, shall we say, misstep, I think he is a great ambassador for conservatism, and he's a young guy, and I pray he has a political future, as I do Ben Carson.
He came out and endorsed Trump. Did you hear that? Were you up on that,
Carson,
gentlemen?
Did?
Yep.
Wow.
Well, he didn't do an outright endorsement. He came out and said what's being done to Trump is unforgivable. And he also said the Republicans, and this I quote, are trying to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory by doing this.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that came from a call.
Well, good grief.
Hey Chris, looking down evaluating the wins and losses of the primary so far with Trump, with Cruz, what has stood out the most in your opinion of each win and each loss?
Trump's ability to win across geographic locations, I think, has surprised a lot of people, whether it's the Northeast, whether it's the Deep South. And to a lesser degree, Cruz has shown that ability as well. I think the voter energy, which even surpasses that of the Democrats back in 2008, I think it's also notable. There's more enthusiasm for the Republican side this time, and I think that's a mechanism, again, of suffering under the most extremist left-wing occupier of the Oval Office this country has ever seen. You've seen evidence of this down ballot in all the states where Democrats have been handed huge losses, state level, and the city level, in townships all over this country. I mean, literally over thousands of elections. That have been lost by Democrats in the era of Obama because the Democrat brand is soiled. courtesy of President Obama. At the same time, the Republicans, kind of like, it's like playing the Cleveland Browns and you happen to be the Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos and you go into Cleveland and you lose. And that's exactly what the Republican Party is doing to the Democrats, playing down to their level, playing down to this backward ideology of Barack Obama, and not at all playing to win. And that's why Donald Trump rises.
Okay. And another issue, Ted Cruz just received today, which did not help him. Governor Bryan from Mississippi gave him an endorsement, Chuck Norris. And we've seen that Donald Trump received an endorsement from Paula Page, who, by the way, he was on my show a couple years ago. The governor of Maine and Cruz won. Do endorsements really, are they really as important as they used to be?
No, no, not so much. They don't hurt, and they help, provide some star power when you're going out and campaigning. But typically, a lot of these politicians kind of read their electorate anyway, and if they come out and it actually benefits more the people who are endorsing rather than the actual candidate these days, because especially when you're a backer of Trump, you're signaling to your voters, hey, I'm a Trump person, I'm not going against you, and you're preserving your own job.
Right.
Which, you know, in some of these people's cases, like Mitch McConnell and Bob Corker and Lindsey Graham and John McCain, I hope that their voters hold them accountable if these guys continue to be anti-Trumps.
Oh, yeah, especially Corker. His last name is N-U-D-D because I will never forget that blasted Corker amendment. See, it's things like that that created Donald Trump. I mean, here's Obama faced, you know, I don't even call this the Iran deal. I call it the Iran capitulation. Here's Obama faced with getting two-thirds of the Senate to pass this capitulation. Of course that's not going to happen. So his supposed enemies, his supposed opponents, introduce legislation to flip-flop it so the people need 67 votes to stop the Iran capitulation instead of a jackass needing 67 to proceed with it. That Corker, whatever you do, gentlemen, don't put me in a room with him because I am an old New York City boy. I don't know if I'll keep my hands to myself. I tell you, I'm honest. What a sellout.
No, these guys, TPP, the last of the omnibus bill to the Iran to the Obama Iran deal, the Republicans have found new and creative ways of bending over for President Obama, and that is why their party is disgusted with him, why their party feels betrayed by them, and why their party is gravitating towards somebody who calls himself a Republican. But think about it this way, guys. I ask this to my listeners all the time that are not anti-Trumpsters. I say, when was the last time Trump betrayed you? And they got to stop and think about it. Well, he gave to Democrat candidates. Well, yeah, but he was a businessman. That was his job. But when was the last time that you put your trust in Donald Trump and he betrayed you? And they're forced to answer he never has because he's never been in politics. And that's right. A lot of people are making that calculation because they can look. They know they don't know if Trump's the answer. But they sure know what the hell the problem is, and that's the folks in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I think basically I believe a lot of individuals like myself, the reason Trump is not number one in my book is he's number two, is because I like consistency. I built my life on consistency, and I think there's a guy, and that's the reason – Ted Cruz won by 17 points in Texas because in Texas they know that the man is a person who's been consistent. He said he's going to do this, he's going to fight corruption, and that's what he did.
Okay, but Ruben, hold on. One of them, you know, I love old quotes, and one of them I recall is, quote, consistency is the last refuge of the unimaginative. So be careful with that consistency label.
Oh, no, but there's also that.
But you know what you got to love about Cruz is A, he is by far the most conservative guy in this race. B, he is a great admirer, and his career reflects this, and a staunch defender of the Constitution of the United States, which has been ground underfoot by this administration. And again, I hate to keep on hearkening back to the timidity of the Republican Party, but they don't see Mr. Obama as any much of an abomination as he is. They don't see the damage he's doing to our founding document and to the trust in public institutions. Heck, Hillary Clinton got up in this Fox town hall last night and said that young people have no faith in government anymore. And is it any wonder? Look who's been in charge the last 7 to 8 years. She gave a striking indictment to the era of Obama, and these Republicans have just sat by and let it happen. And that's why, they're consistently ineffective. At least Ted Cruz is consistently active in defending our rights and liberties under the Constitution.
That's exactly why he became my number one choice. My personal opinion in regards to Ted Cruz. My question for you, Chris, in regards to Mr. Obama not showing up at Nancy Reagan's. I don't recall a sitting president not going to a funeral or a wake or a whatever of a former president's wife.
And the Supreme Court, right on the heels of that.
That bothered me more than because you know Nancy Reagan, for as beloved as she was never elected. She never served in government per se. The Supreme Court justice's story to Scalia. I don't think there was any excuse for Mr. Obama skipping that. Mrs. Obama is headed to the to Mrs. Reagan's funeral. At least he sent a White House emissary to that funeral. Frankly, it's loving Ronald Reagan and the contribution the Reagans made to this country so much, I just prefer Mr. Obama stay away anyway. He belongs nowhere in the same conversation with the great Ronald Reagan. That's just how I feel about it. I don't want Barack Obama anywhere near anything that's Reagan because he hasn't earned it, and B, I think he sullies the legacy just by he sullies the Oval Office right now with his actions. There's a reason why I call him President Obama is because he hasn't behaved as a president. So in his second term, there was no way in good conscience I can continue to call him president because he has so tried to redefine an office that wasn't his to define. And Ronald Reagan lived up to the definition of president that we the people had given him the job, and he lived up to it. Obama has done nothing but fail at it. He'll not get the honor.
Well, that's how the Bolsheviks roll, Chris. I've been fighting these Bolsheviks since the streets of New York City during the Vietnam era. So my scars go way back. And I forgot, in an earlier segment, we were discussing nicknames for Generalissimo Hussein. And I must apologize to the audience because I omitted another label I use on him. I Twitter him, and I call him this on Twitter directly. I call him the Second City Punk. Especially today when Bibby, a man's man, gave jackass administration the back of his hand and just canceled all his meetings in Washington with them. I got a kick out of that. I'm an Israel supporter. I'm a Bibby supporter. I don't know if the audience knows this, but Generalissimo Hussein sent over 100 people, almost 200 people, into Israel, led by little David Axelrod, to try and defeat Bibi in that election. So any kind of disrespect Bibi hands out and dishes out to Generalissimo Hussein is well earned, and we on this program just want to give Bibi Netanyahu an attaboy. Good show, Bibi. Chris.
Yeah, I concur. You know, the tarnishing of the relationship between the United States and Israel under this. It's what perplexes me about the Democrats and how, especially Jewish Democrats, how they continue to throw their support behind a political party which is growing increasingly and alarmingly so anti-Semitic, and to the tune to where they want to leave Israel to the mercy of radical Islamic fundamentalist regimes who want to usher in its utter destruction, and of course Mr. Obama's advocacy in paving the way for a nuclear weapon for the number one state sponsor of terror. Taking little interest or little care as to what that would mean for the nation state of Israel.
Definitely. Very well said.
Yes,
being that I told you I'm an old New Yorker, so obviously I still have Jewish friends, and I have them across the country. And the question I've asked with them, because we've been friends for decades, several of them, I asked them, regarding the Jewish people, because I know the numbers. The first time Obama ran for office, he got 78% of the Jewish vote. The second time, it was down to 68%. And I asked the Jewish friends this question. How could a group of people so individually so intelligent be collectively so stupid? And the three friends that responded to this question agreed with me and had no answer. And yes, they were. I'm talking about three Jewish people, okay? One in Florida, one in Ohio, one in New York City. They all said the same thing. I know. I don't understand it. Go ahead, Ruben.
As a New Yorker, I can tell you that there's a difference. There's the liberal Jews and the conservative Jews. Conservative Jews are a lot less in New York City, and especially in Miami. But there is a good percentage of conservative Jews that are opposed, because in Israel you got the Likud party and you got the Labor Party. The Labor Party is a traditional Democrat. Likud is the Republican, and the Likud party in Israel is very strong. That's the reason Bibi is the prime minister. So there's a difference between the conservative and the liberal Jews in regards to
my broader point is this: is I don't know how anybody who is of Jewish descent supports
right.
a political party, whether you're a liberal or conservative, supports a party that is growing anti-Semitic, which is the Democrat Party in this country.
Definitely,
I really don't get it.
No, that is something that, as a New Yorker, I've been baffled for a long time. Now, Chris, whoever becomes president, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton, they'll be inheriting almost $20 trillion in debt, $10 trillion more than has happened during Obama's watch. He also would be, or she would be, inheriting a very chaotic healthcare system, very chaotic economic stock market system, global issues from Syria to the Ukraine to what do you think? What type of individual do you think would be, because it's going to be a challenge for anyone to deal with so many issues, both on a geopolitical and a domestic policies, or economic policies, to confront a very challenging situation. In your opinion, do you see someone within the field that is going to be able to handle and manage what has been created the past 8 years with Obama?
Yeah. Well, first off, let's talk about what Obama's objective has been. He has tried to weaken and ruin the country to such an extent that everything that you just laid out, America on the retreat around the globe, the economy in shambles, the military, our ships, we don't even have enough ships to carry our own Marines and our own service members around the globe to partake in our responsibilities, much less defend ourselves on foreign soil or defend our allies on foreign soil if needs be, because our Navy is at its smallest level since, I think I heard, 1917, somewhere around there. And then, of course, our troop levels have been cut way down. So Mr. Obama is working on all fronts to weaken America so that the next president, who could be a Republican and a pro-American, which we can't say about our current occupier of the Oval Office, will have such a hard time because the economy will be a basket case. And without a strong economy, you don't have the money to rebuild the military, and then you don't have the ability to project American authority around the globe when you need to stand up to despots, dictators, and communists. So he's doing a very good job of making sure that America is weakened on all fronts when he hands it over to the next occupier of the Oval Office, and I believe it's by design. So what the first order of business for the next president will be get the economic situation humming as quickly as humanly possible. This will require somebody with steel fortitude to be able to cut taxes and also to cut federal spending commensurate with that, because that's where George W. Bush went wrong. He cut taxes and then relied on growth to make up for increased tax receipts from the growth in the economy. He got the growth, but spending just went through the roof because you know, Republicans and Democrats thought the good times were rolling once again. So there needs to be a discipline. You need to hold the line against spending while you relieve the burden from the American people and allow entrepreneurs to rescue this economy once again. That's going to take some time to generate some actual revenue.
I wanted to ask you, gentlemen, did you live through the Carter era going into Reagan? Were you adults then? I don't know your ages, both of you, really.
I was a kid at the time, but I remember going to the gas station on odd number days.
Right. No, but here's why I'm saying this. I was a young adult then, and in the late 70s, I lost my job. And I have to tell you, when I was a young man, I was very focused and very driven. And I went to the unemployment office for a week straight, sometimes 4 and 3:30 in the morning, because you couldn't do anything for unemployment online. Everything had to be done at the office. And I couldn't even get into the building. There were so many people out of work applying for unemployment benefits. Now, here's where I'm going with this. When Reagan was first elected, things were, I believe, even worse than they are now because interest rates were through the roof. So not only did we have a dead economy, mass unemployment, you also had, if you had a credit card or you were trying to buy a car or a home, the interest rates, that's when the interest rates started going north of 20% with charge cards. This happened during the Carter administration. And, of course, it never came down, even when the prime came down like to zero, where it sat for several years, so the Democrats and Republicans could print money and fulfill their insatiable greed to pillage the American taxpayer. But things, I feel, someone who lived through it, looked worse even then to me. So if there's any upside to this mess that we're in, it's that I think a Republican president will straighten it out quicker than Reagan even did back in the early 80s, because, again, we'll mention, Reagan came into an absolute mess, you know, like much worse than what old jackass has been crying about. I inherited a mess. It was so terrible when I came to Washington, D.C. it'll go quicker.
What do you think about that, Chris, what Mark said? Mark? I mean, Chris?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he dropped.
Huh?
I'm looking at the switchboard
He is no longer, you want, I'll call him back. Let's see. But I was serious about that. I will never forget that. I couldn't believe I couldn't get into the unemployment office. Couldn't even get in the building. The lines, 4 a.m., were already wrapped around the building. And who was online were men, who older men, 30s, 40s, 50s, who were supporting their families, who needed those unemployment benefits. I was just a single guy on my own. If I went 2 or 3 days without eating, so be it. You know, I didn't have to look at hungry children or a confused wife like these men did when they went home, like I did when I went home after in the late 2000s when all of us middle-aged white guys were losing our jobs. And, of course, I'm sure the middle-aged Hispanics and blacks too, because the thing is, you see, Obama and his Bolshevik hordes, we are called the bourgeoisie. We are the middle class. They don't like us.
Mark,
I'm trying this whole time. I'm chattering. You know, I'm private sector, Ruben. I can walk and chew gum at the same time. You know, I'm not a Washington, D.C. Bureaucrat with an insincere or absent work ethic. And I'm trying to call him. Phone is dialing. I don't know what happened, Ruben. I don't think it was me because you're still on the line. I'm still on the line.
Yeah.
Let's see what's happening. I'm trying to get him. Yeah, my thing says our caller has dropped. So it was on his end. Maybe something happened. Who knows? But in the meantime, I'm trying. But we will continue with Mr. Salcedo's point that a big mess has to be cleaned up, probably, which is what is fueling the Trump revolution, because we see him. He's an extremely successful, international, multi-billionaire builder. Now, I'm sorry, I don't see anyone in D.C. with such an impressive resume of accomplishments in the real world. You know, I'm not talking about what they did in Washington and who stood in front of the Supreme Court and who did this over here in Congress. No, I'm talking about in the real world where there's unions, where there's, you have to deal with organized crime in New York to get your concrete, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or like Trump has, he's built massive structures in Muslim lands, in Asia, in China, Japan, Dubai, the Arab states. I mean, the man has a list of accomplishments as far as the eye can see. Now, as opposed to little Marco Rubio, who I was joking online, Ruben, I was saying, well, you know, stop belittling Rubio. He does have an accomplishment. He's been diaper trained. So let's move on from that, because the man is very happy to be wearing big boy underpants now and no longer his diapers. That was his accomplishment. No, I'm trying, Ruben. I'm trying to call up
well,
now.
I think maybe he might have got upset because we were asking questions and we were talking too much. You might have.
Oh, really? So, so it's my fault.
I had to explain that.
I was providing historical observations.
I know, but what happens is I told him, I said, we have a set of questions, and that, you know, we're interviewing him, not us giving, you know, our opinion.
I know. Well, we don't have a script, Ruben. All right. Well,
no. That's the reason. I prep is because I have a set of questions for.
Let me ask you on the air. How many questions did you have? You don't have to give me all. You know what they are. How many did you have? How many have you asked so far?
He answered 7. I had 15.
Okay, so we got halfway through it, and.
Yeah.
you know, it was going fine. 15 questions. Also, by the way, I made this show 90 minutes. You know, when
yeah,
we have guests like this, I like to give us an extra half hour. And Mr. Salcedo, if you're still listening and I somehow upset you, I apologize. But you have to understand we're talking to predominantly a student audience, and I feel it's one of my functions to provide perspective. And I was providing a perspective back in the late 70s that
a lot
of people aren't aware of.
But I mean, and it's not that interesting. It's just basically somebody. This guy has a huge show. I mean, all over the nation, and I said we're gonna have questions for you, and you know, sometimes they don't want to be hearing what I say or what he or what you say, because we're supposed to be interviewing them. They don't. You know, that's how it is. Hey, it's over. So.
All right, that's okay. And we thank Mr. Salcedo for joining us for however long he had been on the call with us. But,
he was with us. He was with us for 45 minutes, which was
I know,
really
yeah. He was on for a long time, which is why, knowing I had the extra 30 minutes.
Oh, no, wait a minute. He tried to call back. He's trying to call back. Call him.
Let me check out this. No, I don't see him.
No, try and call him back.
Okay, I will do that, sir. I am doing that right now. It's like I said, I can... Oh, here he... Here he is. He's coming in. I see he's on the dashboard, but I'm waiting for the software to give me the prompt to put him on live.
Yeah, he said that he's trying to call.
Huh.
Hello.
Come on. Hey, Chris. Thank God you're back.
I'm
glad
you're
here.
I tried calling back in, fellas, but the phone, the line wouldn't go through.
What? Ruben was giving me a tongue lashing for talking too much.
I said, Chris is our special guest. I want to hear Chris's.
I was enjoying it right until the phone line dropped off. I was enjoying it immensely, so no problem.
I had to provide that historical perspective, students, how things were back in the 70s, that a young man like myself couldn't even get into the unemployment building. The lines were wrapped around the building multiple times, and this was in, by the way, I just want to... so you know I'm factual. This was in Long Island City, Queens, the unemployment office there, right on the Queens side of the 59th Street Bridge. That's where this was. So students, you have to – that's how bad things were back then. You couldn't get into the unemployment office. And now I just wanted to finish up. Now we're told unemployment is 4.9%, which is complete rubbish, although we can't blame Obama for that because – the rules and regulations identifying those who are unemployed were changed, I believe, back in one of the Bush administrations. So we can't blame him for that, but that 4.9% is garbage. Go ahead, sir.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And the fact that simply because you can't be used by a politician when you're out of work as a statistic anymore, that's why you're no longer counted by your government. That's how disingenuous the way we calculate unemployment is.
That's right. Hey, Chris, if you want to mention the station's website, because it's a very, very popular radio program all over the nation. So, Chris, go ahead. Your website and when you are on the air every day, Monday through Friday.
Sure enough, the website, I guess the easiest one would be the Chris Salcedo Show on Facebook. That's where you can find a lot of information, a lot of posts there. On Twitter, at Chris Salcedo TX, we are there. The first show airs Monday through Friday at 6 o'clock in the morning Central, which is 7 Eastern, on KSEV in Houston. That is K as in Kilo, E as in Echo, S as in Sam, V as in Victor in Houston, Then after 3 hours there, we move up to Dallas-Fort Worth on the great WBAP, the home of Rush Limbaugh in North Texas. And then on Saturdays across the nation on the Blaze Radio Network, which you can find at theblaze.com/radio.
Wow, how do you wet your whistle? You're on the air so much, sir. I mean,
well,
just this show,
I got two
I'm
words
constantly
for you.
Drinking. Go ahead.
I got two words for you. Don Julio. that's a tequila,
Roma?
Everybody, just so you know. That's a tequila,
it was a
just so you know.
It was close. Hey, that's one way to get through the day.
So Chris, in regards to foreign policy, right now we're in a very critical situation. I mean, we have the Saudis and Turkey and the Turks basically conspiring to basically go against Vladimir Putin in Syria with Bashar Assad and Putin tagging together, and then you have ISIS. This whole mess of the Middle East, is there any way that anyone can actually do something about it? Because so far no one has done anything. I mean,
well,
they have
no.
not accomplished it.
Not now. I mean, Barack Obama has made such a massive mess of everything. Remember, Bush administration took a lot of heat and used a lot of resources, but even in Obama and Joe Biden's own word, Iraq was a success. They both said those same words, Iraq was a success. So what Barack Obama literally did was snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory in Iraq. In so doing, he created this vacuum, this leadership vacuum in the Middle East, and all of the regional powers now are vying for control. But Mr. Obama did something even worse. He decided he would install, as a regional hegemon, if you will, the Iranians by gifting them nukes and allowing them to take over the region, which will spell nothing but disaster for our allies and for America in the long run. But it's not just in the Middle East. It's Russia. It's China. It's North Korea. You've got the Chinese right now militarizing illegal islands that they are building themselves in the South China Sea, threatening our commerce, threatening our allies, the freedom of the seas. And Barack Obama, the most he's managed to do right now is to threaten to sail some aircraft carriers out that way and to fly a couple of planes near those islands. But they've got fighter jets on those islands now and surface-to-air missiles on those islands right now. And they are doing a military buildup because they know they have a weak occupier in the Oval Office in Barack Obama. And the next occupier of the Oval Office, hopefully we get a president, will have a hard time dislodging them once they're there without going to war. And that's what the Chinese want. North Korea,
yes,
it's
sir,
nuclear.
Go ahead. I'll shut up.
The nuclear problem with North Korea, again, we can thank another Democrat for the North Koreans able to have nuclear weapons. And Barack Obama, of course, has done absolutely nothing about the North Koreans during his time in office. So the next occupier of the Oval Office, again, praise God, a president, will have quite a heavy lift on their hands. And I frankly, without seeing the intelligence in front of me, I wouldn't even know where to begin. But because our ability to project our power has been so diminished by this president.
You know,
right.
Gentlemen, it's funny, Ruben, you mentioned the Turks. Don't forget, I'm half Maltese. And the Maltese and the Turks have a massive clash way back in history when the Turks were invincible. Wherever the Turks' armies marched, they conquered. I also want to remind the audience, don't forget, almost 1700, the Turks were at the gates of Vienna. Look at a map. See where Vienna is in the heart of Europe. That's how far the Turks advanced. Anyway, Turks invaded Malta, and a little tiny Knights of Malta army defeated them. So I am well read about the Turks. And the way I describe them,
and I want to share this with the students, is there's been a century, this has gone on for centuries, a centuries learned and a centuries earned dislike and distrust of the Turks. And I could just can imagine what it would be like to be an Eastern European in the Balkans and having to live your life alongside this Turkish onslaught that's been going on for well over 1,000 years into Europe. And I'm just talking the Turks. I'm not talking the other Muslims that, you know, came up through Spain and tours in France, or the other ones that raided Italy and Sicily. I'm talking about the Turks themselves. And I want to finish up with saying, gentlemen, I cringe when I hear a McCain or Lindsey Graham talking about going to war in Syria, because while we have President Obama in the White House, I do not even want to go to war with Liechtenstein, okay? Not the commander-in-chief of this stature or lack thereof. Not even Liechtenstein. And students, that's a little tiny country in the middle of Europe, by the way. Go ahead, gentlemen. We don't even want to go to war with Liechtenstein while Obama's in office.
Well, continuing on foreign policy, Chris, I believe the situation in Latin America, we have a country like Brazil, which is one of the biggest countries in the Americas, and then we got Mexico. And this whole situation of the mass migration coming from Latin America because of corrupt country politicians and governments over there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the thing that a lot of people don't realize, I'm sorry, but I got to say this too. What a lot of people don't realize is Mexico is firmly controlled by a group of wealthy oligarchs. And the last thing they want to do is provide social benefits to their own citizens, because that'll take money out of their own pockets. This is why we have this poverty and depravity in Mexico. This is why all these people are coming across the border, because Mexico gives you zilch. If you're a Mexican citizen, you get the back of the hand, sort of like what Bibi just did to Obama recently. And that's why these people pour across the border, because Mexico provides zero social benefits. I'm sorry, gentlemen, I just had to point that out.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's not even so much social benefits. It's also freedom and liberty. There's no such thing as the Second Amendment down that way. And you're right, the Mexican system very closely resembles the Don system of which it devolved from.
Right.
And the Don system is basically, you know, royalty, guys that were sent over here by the Spanish crown, and they were gifted lands, and they had they're able to have people that worked those lands, and they enslaved a lot of folks. Look, a lot of the same power structures in place inside of Mexico. It's a backward third world country, and my descendancy is Mexican. And so there's a good reason why so many people want to get out of Mexico, is because, well, it's just a terrible place to be. I mean, wouldn't you want to leave Mexico too? So, and
right,
when the government leaves, gets paid off by the drug cartels, and so the government's fat and happy. In the meantime, they disarm their population so they can't even fight back, because if the Mexican people were armed, I have a sneaking suspicion things would change right quick down that way. But the Mexican government chance that. So then,
right,
so the Mexican government then blames us because their people are starting to get guns courtesy of the Americans. And so the Mexicans have their leadership has the temerity to come up here and wag their finger at us for our freedom and our Second Amendment rights, to which I say to Vicente Fox or Felipe Calderon, excuse me, don't come to my country and deign to tell me about what we have to do with our Second Amendment rights and with our guns, because you come from a third world backwater country who doesn't even know the name or the meaning of the word liberty. So I have nothing but disdain for the Mexican government and for the Central American government of Spanish-speaking countries who exploit their people and grind their people into the dirt. And that is the reason why they seek refuge in the great country of the United States to the north.
Right. No, but that's where I was heading. The question that I have for you is in regards to our economic policy towards Latin America, how would the next president of the United States, because Latin America, to a certain degree, has taken a back precedent. It's not front precedent. I mean, it's not a priority. But I think with the mass migration, what would you, in your view, would you see that the next president of the United States, how should he handle the mass migration that's occurring right now and the economic policies that we need to work out with these Latin American countries?
The mass migration, I would stop. We don't have the ability to accommodate these people.
Right.
Simply because you have a need doesn't give you a right to infiltrate a country, to come into a country without permission. I would work with these other governments to stabilize their governments, to make it, to necessitate the fact that they don't need to be leaving. I would let them know that America is going to be shutting down its border. We will no longer be your safety valve because you can't get your act together. So you're going to have a humanitarian crisis on your hands, not to mention all of your squads battling for power. So go to the authorities and tell them in those countries and say, look, you're going to have a big, massive problem on your hands if you don't accommodate our request here. We will help you get your country under control, but you got to keep your people here. Mexico, it bears pointing out that our friends of the South, they have allowed this mass migration to come through their country so long as these people pledge that they're only passing through and they won't burden Mexico. So Mexico
right.
is saying, well, we don't want you folks in here from Central America, but as long as you're passing to go burden the United States, we're cool with that. So that shows you how friendly the United States is to the United States of America, to which I say, you know what? We should secure that border and make sure that Mexico isn't so foolhardy with its southern border anymore.
I agree. Totally. Yep. Very good. Mark, you want to
go? Yeah, I was saying Mexico's lucky I'm not the president because I would build a wall like Trump. However, I would build it on the Mexican side of the Rio Grande. I would use their real estate to build a wall. And I wouldn't even do it on U.S. territory. And if they objected, you know, my response would be, oh, well, you know, you aren't controlling your border. You're doing all these things that Mr. Salcedo said. So guess what? We're going to take some of your territory to build our wall. And, of course, they're going to pay for it. You know, there's one thing in this whole illegal immigration debate that I rarely hear mentioned. And I feel it's a 600-pound gorilla in the room, not an 800, a 600-pound. And that is all these illegal immigrants from south of the border, probably everywhere else coming here, are working off the books. They're paying no taxes. I wonder what the, you know, and this, I wonder, and this drives me kind of crazy, the IRS is so vigilant. So aggressive in making sure they get every little stinking penny and they make sure they wring out the American taxpayer like a rag. But yet there's tens of millions of these people, at least 10 million, working off the books. You know, I see it all
and
over
I think
New Jersey.
That's a real reason why Donald Trump is also excelling is because the American people are tired of both political parties telling us that we have to sit down, shut up, and pay for everything, while our elected leaders open up our borders. Look, how many of those elites up in Washington, D.C. have their kids going to school with illegal immigrants from all over the globe, whether they be from Pakistan, China, India, Indonesia, Mexico, Central America? No. None of these elites up in Washington, D.C. have to have their children share a classroom with those individuals and have their taxpayer money go to fund these classrooms. No, it's we, the people, that's put up with that. So there's a massive disconnect between the people in Washington, D.C. and the people they're allegedly allowed to serve. And again, this is part and parcel of an America whose leaders say that Americans don't deserve to be treated as well as illegal immigrants. And that's got to change. And I think Donald Trump is going to go a long way to changing that if he is, continues to dominate the Republican field as he has done.
Hey, Chris, I don't want to abuse because I know you wake up early in the morning. How many more minutes can we have you for?
Well, I probably got to hit the sack here in the next 10 minutes. So I was hoping I didn't know how long your show was. So, I probably should be able to call tonight. Got to do a little show prep.
Chris, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming, and I definitely look forward to hearing your show tomorrow. And you're always welcome on our show.
Thanks, fellas.
Appreciate it.
I enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much for joining us, and I apologize if I interjected too much, but, we're dealing with a lot of students, and I always like to provide background perspective to what we're discussing. And, you know, sir, before you leave, you just want to give your website and radio show data again?
Oh, yeah, sure. You guys can go to ChrisSalcedo.com. You can go to KSEVradio.com, WBAP.com, or TheBlaze.com. You'll find the Chris Salcedo Show any one of those places.
Fantastic.
Okay,
good night.
Thank you very much, and sweet dreams.
All right, boys, good night.
All right.
Good night.
Have a good one.
Yeah, I'm so glad he called back, Ruben. I feel exonerated.
Well, at least I had my 10 out of the 15 questions.
Two-thirds, 10 out of 15.
Yeah, I tend to, because, you know, he does the same thing when he's interviewing people. I listen to him, and he has, okay, this is question number one. He's always asking questions, so I said, let me do the same thing. I'm going to have questions for him. But anyway, I think it was a very good interview. That was congratulations again. Donald won in Mississippi and Michigan.
Good. Idaho, not till later. I'm so glad. You know, I'm supporting him, Ruben. And it's not so much that I think Donald Trump is the do-all, say-all, you know, walk on water. You know, speak to us with Corinthian columns behind us type of thing.
Yeah.
But the fact that I'm looking at who is aligning against him, and that just inspires me and drives me even more. You know, I'm unemployed. I spend about 5 hours a day body slamming all these anti-Trump critics on both Twitter and Facebook. And I'm proud to say some famous people have blocked me on Twitter because I have no respect for these people. I have more respect for someone grubbing cigarettes on the corner or a cab driver than I do for a Mitt Romney, a Ryan, or some... it's a PG-13 show. I won't say it. Or Mitch McConnell. They're sickening, pitiful human beings. How did we get here, Ruben, that the worst America has to offer is concentrated in Washington, D.C.? How the hell did we get here? And it's not just Democrats, it's Republicans, too. How did this happen, Ruben? How did the scummers end up running the show? You know, any ideas?
Yeah. Well, it's the people. The people have actually have allowed this to happen. I've had incidents already with individuals both on the Cruz, on the Rubio, on the Trump side that had basically disrespect. I mean, I had one of the young ladies that one of these a-holes basically started saying you should be raped. I mean, you know, he went off and I had to step in because I said, you know, great, you like Trump, I like Cruz, or she likes Cruz. You don't have to insult the person in that fashion. You know, that does, you can.
I know, I know, I know. Especially they do it on social media.
I mean,
you know,
the guy was saying, you know, you should be schooled and then put a bat up your, you know. Come on.
Don't even go there. Disgusting. You know what it is? It's on social media. We have all these people. I call them, and again, it's a family show. I call them female reproductive organs because it's in social media. You have to wonder how they behave, you know, talking to you in a face-to-face environment.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I don't think they would be as bad. You know, I don't think they would be as gruff because then they have to look you in the eyes and do this. You know, that's just a product of this 21st century social media bullcrap.
Yeah, I mean, you can disagree. Like me and this lady, we had a disagreement, and she said, you know, she's like you. I mean, she said, you know, if Trump doesn't win, I would go for Cruz, and we have our differences. But this a-hole, when he started insulting in such a sexual way, I mean, that you cannot, I cannot tolerate, because, you know, I have a sister, I have daughter, nieces, you know, you don't treat women like that, you know?
Oh, yeah, I'm with you 100%. I mean, you have to,
stand in front of the bullet, stand in front of the knife for your women folk. I'm first generation myself. You know, my father literally came over here as a teenager from Europe. So I'm hardcore first generation. And we have these values. You look at my wife or my daughter or my grandchildren, my granddaughters or my nieces just the wrong way, and I will take your damn head off and not feel the least slightly bit guilty doing it. And I have done that in the past. I did it. I almost lost my job. I had a senior executive position at a Manhattan firm, and I just about dismembered someone who said something disgusting to my wife along the lines of what these people were telling you. And even the words incensed me. I could imagine someone trying to lift a hand or something like that to any of my women folk. I just hope that person has their last will and testament in order, because this big New York City guy is going to cream you. And man should do the same thing. Go ahead, Ruben.
I told the guy, you know, I'm a New Yorker. You don't mess around like that with a New Yorker, because we will kick your butt.
And kick your butt 15 seconds or less, Charlie Brown. Don't forget that one either. You know, Ruben, you know, I want to share this story along these lines of what we're talking about. There was a transit strike in the 80s in New York City. It wasn't a transit. It was the commuter buses from New Jersey were on strike. Now, I have family in Brooklyn, so I stayed in Brooklyn. This happened in the summer. So now I'm away from my wife and kids because I'm staying in Brooklyn. I work in Manhattan. I was taking the subway into Brooklyn, staying there, going back in the morning. Anyway, I'm sitting on the stoop of my in-law's house in Brooklyn because I want to describe to the people the city. As I'm sitting there, I see a young man run by me. Now, the thing is, this house is set back from the houses on either side of it, so I only have a limited view. This young man comes running into my view, about 18, running hard, fear in his eyes. I see three middle-aged gentlemen chasing him. And one of them is coming from across the street trying to cut him off at the angle. Anyway, I just see them run off. They go out of my sight. A minute later, I see the three men running past the house now with fear in their eyes. And behind them was like 15 or 18 young Brooklyn guys chasing them. And this is the thing with the city. You can have a face-off with someone, and you're going to have to end it. This is what I've learned, because I was a lone wolf. You have to end that confrontation real quick,
because you have no idea what the hell is going to come out of a door, or the windows, a car can pull up, and all of a sudden you're outnumbered 8-9-1, or you're outgunned. So what Ruben's talking about is true. Us old New York guys, we learned to end it and end it quick so we can get the hell out of there because God knows what's coming. And this is the urban environment. This is what that's like. And I'm sure it's like that in the ghetto now, same thing. You have trouble with someone not from your block, you better deal with that trouble and then get your fanny out of there.
Anyway, go ahead, Ruben. I'm sorry.
No, but that's this guy was basically saying those horrible things to his, and I said, you know, you're not a man. If you have to treat a woman like that, and you know, yeah, you can disagree that that Trump is better than Cruz and Cruz is better. You don't have to get into that point because that's on call to do something like that. And he's, I don't care, no class.
Yes, I know. Well, actually, they do have class. The old saying is, you have class, but it's all low. So that's how I've always termed those kind of people. But I'm just excited about Trump, and I wanted to point out to the audience, look, you must know by now, Ruben supports Cruz. I support Trump, yet we
That's
can
right.
talk like adults. We
That's
can
right.
discuss differences like
yep.
civil people, just like Americans are supposed to be. Hello. You know, sodomizing opponents and whatnot is something that occurs in third world nations. It's not supposed to even be said, nonetheless attempted. Here in supposedly the first world, a civilized nation, the USA.
That's right.
Uncalled for. And there's people on social media that I see the cruelest, most vile things, and I'll get up in their face verbally, but I won't respond with something like that. That's like uncalled for.
That's uncalled for.
I just don't understand that.
To say that to a woman, that you're not a real man if you do that. And I had to step in and tell him off. I said, you know, you want to talk to me like that? Go ahead. Don't talk to a young lady who's just basically defending. She's for Cruz. You don't have to insult her in that fashion just because she's Cruz. So that was my incident on social media with this A-hole.
Well, I have plenty of them because I go after these people when I see people on social media posting. I just did a post today. And I was saying I'm getting very upset at my fellow patriots because I see both of them, both Trump people and Cruz people. I'm not singling anyone out. And what's irritating me is they're recirculating what I would term Bolshevik deceitful propaganda, say, put out by Channel 2. And then someone elects Cruz, takes a Channel 2 report, and blasts it all over social media when hello. Channel 2 is the Bolshevik News Network. Channel 4 is the Bolshevik News Network. So I wouldn't circulate a story negative about Cruz because that's not my style. If I got something negative to say to someone about Cruz, I'm going to say it. I'm not going to refer to some Bolshevik reference to rip down Ted Cruz because here's what's going on, folks. Ted or Donald are going to be our nominee.
One of the two is going to be our nominee.
Recirculating these negative attacks on these two men because the Democrats are sitting back and they're going to cherry pick what they think are the good ones. And we're doing all the screening for them. So, hello, if you want to help the Bolsheviks, if you want to help the New World Order, Robber Baron, Democrat, Republican machines, then keep recirculating this stuff. Now, the thing is, if you like your candidate, support him. If and you know what? Convince me by promoting Cruz why he's the better choice. Just like I'm going to try and convince you that Trump is the better choice. But don't go down these negative roads. That's not helping us. Because, again,
especially,
it's going to be Ted or Donald. Go ahead.
Especially insulting a woman in that fashion, that, you know, of sexually attacking her. I mean, that
I hope
that,
it wasn't
that.
A Trump fan. Was it a Trump fan?
Yeah.
I apologize for that, because there's absolutely no place for that.
Yeah, I mean, most of the Trump individuals are fine. They're fine, but this guy needs to get a whipping.
And you know, also, I wanted to say, you know what I've noticed? I've noticed these Bolsheviks and these pro-heathen, savage, jihadist Muslim people.
Yeah.
I've seen a few of them acting and trying to present themselves as Republicans or middle of the road, and all they're trying to do is just foster more dissent and foster more arguments between the two camps. You know, it goes along with the same. You know, you hear I hear Hillary Clinton. I you know, that's one woman I want to slap. But you hear these Democrats talking, look at the Republicans, how they're attacking each other, this, that. In the meantime, all they're doing is responding to the questions by these so-called moderators. So if you've got an issue with this Democrats, maybe you should take it up with the moderators who are asking these dumbass questions and purposely fostering this kind of dissension with the Republican candidates. That's the damn problem. It's not the candidates. And
you're right.
Although, sadly, if I were a candidate, I would brush off these questions and just come right out and tell them, screw you.
Well, the moderators are totally a-holes also. I mean, because they don't know how to control an environment like a debate. They do not. They're totally
wrong. They're agenda-driven. This is the problem. We don't have impartial moderators. We have agenda-driven people, whether they're Bolsheviks or they're New World Order UN sellouts. They have an agenda, and that's the issue. Now, I want to change the topic 1 second for a little laugh. I'm seeing this on Twitter, and someone on Twitter is alerting the world that ISIS spelled backwards is sissy. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, I can't believe here, Ruben, in the 21st century, the barbarism, the brutality we're seeing come out of the Mideast, specifically ISIS, although many others are to blame, and then people here in this country defending it. It's defenseless. Now, the latest is the State Department is investigating the genocide of Christians to see if there's anything there. I guess 42,872 video clips, people being decapitated, drowned, beaten to death, or stoned, doesn't qualify to them. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up with we are
all
students
right.
for a better future. We are 501c3. For every dollar you donate to us, we spend $1.65. So we spend 165% of our donations towards the cause. No one is paid. Ruben doesn't get paid. I'm not paid. And Doreen certainly doesn't take money. You know, all of this group, this show, is all predicated on Her Highness Doreen Finkel. I love her. What a patriot.
We
and,
love her.
Yeah, Ruben, wrap it up, baby. We got 60 seconds.
Well, next week, it's on you for guests.
Well, you know what? I'm trying to invite someone for next week, so leave that open. Something that's very pertinent to what's going on, okay?
Oh, I will. It's going to be your turn now.
Okay, yeah. Well,
all right.
What I'm trying to do is invite, and it might be a Jersey-centric show, I would like to invite on the air, and I hope he accepts, one of the first candidates to declare for the Republican gubernatorial nomination in New Jersey.
Wow.
10 seconds.
Ooh.
Okay, folks. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed our show and our perspectives. And God bless America.